Jessica versus Monahan. Ms. Keller?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the Court. This is a criminal appeal arising from a conviction for gun smuggling charges and child pornography. The procedural history is a little bit complicated. We are only appealing today the gun charges. We are not appealing the child pornography charges. We had a couple of guilty pleas taken at the court below, and one of them had an appeal waiver, one did not, in accordance with the plea agreement. And so the only thing that's left open to appeal in the direct appellate stage are the gun charges, and that is what we are appealing today under the Speedy Trial Act violation. Mr. Mooneyham was sentenced to 220 months imprisonment for the child pornography charges. He was only sentenced to 120 months imprisonment for the gun charges. And so there's not going to be a whole lot of effect on the sentence that he was given. What we're looking for today is for this court to give some guidance to government officials, both state and federal, in how they work together when it comes to joint investigations and cooperation amongst the individuals. So
let me ask you, counsel, would you agree that the federal prosecutor is not bound unless he's colluded, that the United States government is not bound by, let's say, the purposes or the actions of the state agents?
Well, we have several actors, federal actors here that we were going to talk about, not just the prosecutor, not just the federal prosecutor, the U.S.
attorney.
Well,
that's not my question. Even if the delay or the purpose is occasioned by the state actors, but not, there's no collusion, and the district court found that there was no collusion, or that this wasn't the primary purpose, how do we get around that?
If there is no collusion by the federal government, not just the federal prosecutor, but the federal government, then the mere ruse exception would not apply. But we have several federal actors engaged in this cooperation, as it's been termed by the government, that we need to look at today, not just the U.S. attorney that had been prosecuting Mr. Mooneyham for the original indictment for illegal alien smuggling. We also have an ATF agent who was keeping tabs and working, having a lot of conversations with the state prosecutor.
This happens all the time, though. He was arrested on a valid indictment or complaint in the state court.
Yes.
All right. And so you're saying that there's some cooperation that's going on when he's arrested, that means that we should find that there's some collusion when the district court didn't find any collusion?
We do believe the district court was wrong. And the reason we believe the district court was wrong is because there were several acts that took place before, during, and after that arrest that show that there was collusion on the part of the federal government and the state government. And remember, we're not just — the court's standard is not absolutely no collusion. It is the exception, the mere ruse exception, that this court adopted in De La Peña Juarez. The exception will apply where the defendant demonstrates that the primary or exclusive purpose of the civil detention was to hold him for future criminal prosecution.
Well, how is it the primary purpose when he is being held under a valid state charge?
He may have initially — perhaps the vehicle that led to the arrest was the underlying hindering apprehension charge. There was a request by the U.S. attorney to raise the bail, keep the bail higher than
normal.
That was
on the Western District case.
That's true.
Now, how are you going — and this rule has to do with this instant offense. How does what the U.S. attorney did in the Western District relate to the Speedy Trial Act with regards to this instant offense? That one was dismissed.
What we are tying everyone back to is the ATF agent, the federal ATF agent who was working not only with the AUSA in the Western District, but also with the AUSA in the Southern District. All communications came through the vehicle of the ATF agent. So the ATF agent, who was officing in the Victoria Sheriff's Victoria County Sheriff's Office, so working hand in hand, very well aware of what's going on in the state prosecution, the state investigation. This ATF agent had been investigating Mr. Mooneyham since 2004 for these firearm suspicions. This ATF agent then is also becoming aware of the Western District indictment for illegal alien smuggling. He filters that information to that AUSA. That AUSA then asks the ATF agent to get in contact with the state prosecutor requesting a higher bail. That happens. So then you've got Mr. Mooneyham sitting in jail for 5 months, and one of the things that took place during that five-month period was constant conversation between the ATF agent and the state prosecutor, keeping tabs on, is anything happening? Not just mere cooperation here, because the transcript of the trial setting for the state, the apprehension claim by the state government makes it very clear that the state prosecutor was doing what he was doing to allow the federal government more time to get its paper trail.
Doesn't this happen all the time? You're a defense attorney. Don't you often have people that are charged in different jurisdictions, and you're working things out, you're going to handle something in one jurisdiction, it's going to be dismissed over here, it's going to be a concurrent sentence. This is a common type of situation. This is not a situation where he's being held just on a complaint or being held for four. He actually has state charges, and you're not claiming that those state charges were invalid. You're not saying that they trumped up these state charges to keep him in jail. You're saying, I guess, is that they never intended to try him on it. Is that your position?
That's correct, and they didn't try him on it.
Well, counsel, let me make sure, Judge, when you said, we're looking at fact-finding here and what the state was doing and what the federal government was doing, it appears to me the district judge found that, to the contrary, that the state was not interested in going forward if the federal government tried your client. But the contrary is not necessarily, the contrary is true as well, though, that if the federal government did not go forward, there's every indication the state would have tried them. I mean, we are looking at fact-finding that you have, at least on that basis, not a legal question, have to get us to set aside. Isn't that a fair interpretation of the evidence, that this wasn't a ruse? There was no need to prosecute him for two different offenses. State was proceeding, but would drop it if the federal government took up the baton, and if not, they would try him. Isn't that the evidence?
It might be a different case, Your Honor. I disagree, because the state charges were different and distinct from the federal charges. It would be one thing if there were two drug charges, a state charge and a federal charge, and the state government elected to not prosecute for the drug charge because the federal government did that. Here we've got this straw man charge of hindering apprehension.
What is the penalty for hindering apprehension?
It's a third-degree felony.
And you could get, what, 10 years?
I don't even think it's got a 10-year.
2 to 5 or something like
yes.
that? Yes. 2 to 5. All right. And how much is he going to get for this drug offense?
Well, what he...
I mean, for
120 months. It was the gun charges. 120
months. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And a pretty good piece of evidence that was put in place at the trial court, at the district court, was that the defense expert testified he had never seen a $250,000 bail set for a third-degree felony in that county. And so there's something fishy going on there. Why was this bail set so high right after the AUSA calls and asks for a high bail? Why was the...
Because he violated the conditions of his bail release from the Western District of Texas. And that's not uncommon. I used to practice criminal law. And it's not uncommon when somebody violates a condition of their bail, or it appears that they're revoked. Or that it suggests that you're going to have some problems with him because he's got other charges pending. Why is that suspicious?
Well, that could be the case of why, but there was no discussion about that by the ATF agent or anyone else who testified that was why the request for the high bail was put in place. What the government, and I don't know if they put this in an evidence or just argument, but they said they wanted more time to put together their revocation of the pretrial release documents together. When you look at the cases that this court has handed down and that this court has distinguished dealing with Speedy Trial Act violations, a lot of the things that this court has used to distinguish other cases finding a violation took place in this case. For example, In this case, the AUSA asked the ATF agent to communicate with the state prosecutor and to seek a higher bail. In the Ramirez case, this is an unpublished opinion, but in the Ramirez case, which is the first real collusion case that this court discussed, it was before the Meir-Ruse exception was adopted, but you did do a discussion of collusion. This court pointed out specifically in footnote number 3 that the bail was set by the state only, and that the negotiations for the bail took place only between the state defense attorney and the state prosecutor. Here we've got a federal prosecutor injecting himself into the amount of bail that's being set.
Where do you say the the line is drawn between cooperation, normal cooperation, as Judge Benavides was alluding, in terms of these processes, and collusion? I mean, the cases that I saw, I mean, to satisfy this mere ruse takes more than just showing facially there's some, you know, overlap here. Are you saying because the ATF agent was sort of in the middle of the wheel, so to speak, that tips the scales? What are you saying gets this past, you know, cooperation to satisfying mere ruse? The cases that have found it, looks like the factors have been stronger than what you have here.
He was being held, and his detention was being postponed by the state law enforcement officials to allow the federal government more time to prepare their case. And that is, those are specific words at the transcript of the trial date setting in the state court. The prosecutor said there's an investigation by the ATF, which they're going to bring before the grand jury to charge him, I believe, concerning a firearm, and they need more time. And the state trial court says, how does that affect this case, this state case? And the state prosecutor says, Your Honor, there are other cases or investigations still pending. If those are taken by the federal jurisdiction, I don't anticipate a need for a trial in this case. Again, this is not a drug case versus a drug case.
But that's inherent. I mean, I can see where if the judge would have looked at those facts your way, he may have found the facts the way. But there's another way to interpret it. And in Texas, prosecutors have the discretion to prosecute. Ask the judge to dismiss the case. Why isn't it a function of the prosecutor, state prosecutor, to say and use his discretion to say, well, if the feds take him off my hands for 120 months, which is 6 years, the most I can get here is 5 years. In my discretion, if they do that, I'm going to dismiss these cases and this charge. Isn't that something that happens frequently? With no bad motives involved.
Yes, Your Honor. And what we're looking at more of is, though, what can we tell from those statements made by the state prosecutor that was going on underneath the surface between the federal ATF officer and the state prosecutor? We've got, I want a higher bail. We've got, keep me apprised of the situation so I can act accordingly. And then we've got other things that took place, such as the minute that the state prosecutor finds out that the judge is not going to go for the trial postponement, the state trial judge, he gets on the phone with the ATF agent and he says, hey, you need to move. The federal complaint is filed that day. And then the dismissal notes of the state trial charges is defendant charges are dismissed. He is pending federal prosecution. And so you've got working together, not just in cooperating, but they are working together. And part of the thing that was said during that transcript was the federal government needs more time to assess its case. That's the kind of delay that violates the law of the Speedy Trial Act. It violates the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. It's not just mere cooperation here. We've got cooperation in delay. And that's a very different thing than cooperation.
Delay doesn't do it. You have to show that the primary purpose was to delay this thing. Not just that there was delay, but the motivation. You have to show that that's the motivation. I can sympathize with your case, but I have a hard time when the judge can draw a different conclusion from the same evidence, how he clearly erred in his factual finding.
It is a high burden, and we're at the clearly erroneous standard here today, so we're climbing a high mountain. But I think there's just too much there, starting from the very beginning with the ATF officers officing with the Victoria County Sheriff's Office. Then we've got those folks helping him conduct the search. What was taken at that search? The firearms and the child pornography, the stuff that was used for the conviction. And then he's sitting in prison, in jail for 5 months, where the ATF agent is discussing and having discussions with the state prosecutor about how long is this taking? Let's get higher bail. Are we going to get a continuance? So we don't have a smoking gun here. And I don't think we're ever going to have a smoking gun in a case like this, where you're going to have an ATF officer or prosecutor say, we had them held because we wanted to prepare a case. We have to look at the circumstantial evidence. And there's just too much of that here in this case to look the other way for a reasonable district court to not have concluded that this was a mere ruse.
Do you agree if the state had tried your client for whatever, the interference with apprehension, you would not have a case? If everything else had happened just the way it has here, but rather than dropping the charges, the state had proceeded and tried them, there is no case.
I think it's a critical piece of evidence. I don't know that
Again?
I would. I think that is a critical piece of evidence, the lack of the prosecution. But I wouldn't say that there would be no case. But I do think it's a fundamental piece of the case.
All right.
Unless there are any other questions, I'll give my 5 seconds back to the court.
Thanks, Ms. Wilson.
May it please the court. The government, of course, contends here that the district court did not commit clear error under any circumstances and that its legal conclusions were sound. The court conducted a full evidentiary hearing on this issue. 3 witnesses testified who were involved in this proceeding in one way or another. One was the ATF agent, Agent Taylor. Another one was Deputy Garcia of the Victoria County Sheriff's Department, and the other one was ATF Agent Lewis, who was involved with the search warrant, but was more involved with the child pornography charges, which, as Ms. Keller pointed out, are unrelated to this appeal. The district court's opinion was very thorough, very well-reasoned, and it properly found that the arrest on the state charges during the execution of the federal search warrant for firearms did not trigger the Speedy Trial Act deadlines. This wasn't a straw man situation. One thing that's important to note was several weeks before the federal search warrant was executed, Deputy Garcia with the Sheriff's Department went out to Mooneyham's residence to look for his girlfriend, Ms. Rodenkirch. When Mr. Mooneyham refused to let him inside the home to see if he could find the girlfriend, Deputy Garcia went back to his office and actually made an entry. So these weren't trumped up charges. He was already looking for Ms. Rodenkirch and had specifically warned Mr. Mooneyham that he could be charged later if Ms. Rodenkirch was found there for hindering apprehension. That was already in place. And in fact, when the ATF went out there in late June to execute the search warrant for the guns, Agent Taylor was aware of that because when he ran the search warrant and all the attendant facts, he saw the hindering apprehension notation. So under no circumstances was it a straw man type situation. And in fact, the state went on to indict Mr. Mooneyham for hindering apprehension in relation to Ms. Rodenkirch. As Ms. Keller agrees, her burden is quite high here. Mr. Mooneyham had to prove 2 things. First of all, that it was his burden of proof, of course, and secondly, as Judge Benavides pointed out, that the primary or exclusive purpose of the arrest or detention was to hold him for future prosecution. Now, in the hearing before Judge Rainey took note of the hearing before the district court in Victoria County and what was said between the prosecutor and whatnot.
Didn't Judge Rainey make a mistake? I mean, he did say this state prosecutor never stated that he was not prepared to move forward should the federal government not act. He only stated that he would not move forward if the federal authorities decided to indict. But that's not exactly correct because Agent Taylor testified that the state prosecutor told him that they weren't prepared at that time to move forward with the state case for hindering apprehension. So there is some testimony here that they weren't prepared to go forward.
That's correct. That is what Agent Taylor testified to. You're correct. However, when they were before the District Court of Victoria County during the hearing in November, The prosecutor never stated that he wanted to not go forward in the sense that of the hindering apprehension
he
and whatnot.
He wanted to get this case off the,
absolutely.
Off his docket.
I don't disagree with that at all, Your Honor. And as you point out, this type of cooperation often occurs in the criminal setting. And he was looking, Mr. Mooneyham was looking at far more lengthy prison sentences on the federal side than on the state side. The Western District also dismissed its case, but as the court pointed out, what happened in the Western District is totally unrelated and is not important to this proceeding because he had already been indicted there. He was out on bond, and so Agent Taylor, who knew about that because Victoria's a small office, they talk, and one of the agent's brothers worked over in San Antonio for ICE and called him up. There, you have to remember that there was only a couple, there was actually an intervening weekend between what happened in Victoria and what happened on Monday in San Antonio. So it wasn't this lengthy proceeding because the other thing one has to remember is Mr. Mooney, although it's not stated, it obviously was a concern that he was a possible flight risk because as it was pointed out in the record, Mr. Mooneyham had family in Mexico as well as property. So clearly that was a concern that maybe he'd cross the border. But simply because we have some cooperation doesn't trigger. And the other thing that's very important to remember here is what the state is saying cannot necessarily be imputed to what the federal government did or did not do. In other words, what was intended by the federal government. Because as Agent Taylor testified, while he had some ongoing communications, they weren't much. He wasn't actively involved in the grand jury proceedings. He didn't show up for things. However, he was apprised. And that's cooperation. That's not collusion. And so in this court has previously stated in Taylor that a state arrest by state authorities doesn't rise to the level of collusion. Neither does a federal detainer or a federal complaint. Only the federal arrest can trigger the Speedy Trial Act. And then you have to be held for the purpose of answering a federal charge. And here, of course, you have three unrelated charges. You have the alien smuggling, you have the hindering apprehension of the girlfriend, and then, of course, you have the gun trafficking and secondarily, the child pornography charges. I think that Judge Rainey's opinion thoroughly covers both the facts and the law. And if at the end of the hearing, Judge Rainey said that he wanted to go ahead and do additional research because he wanted to be sure that he was correct in his conclusion, because he was troubled by some of the comments that had occurred during the evidentiary hearing.
So what would be your position then? Let's say that this state prosecutor never intended to prosecute this fellow, wanted to keep him in jail because he wanted him to be prosecuted in a federal court, and that was the sole reason. Your argument then would be that wouldn't make any difference unless the federal prosecutor or the federal authorities were part of that agreement.
Correct.
In other words, it wouldn't make any difference.
They're independent
sovereigns.
What the motive
of the state, that they would have to collude and be part of the agreement.
That's correct.
So the federal government can get a benefit of the state's motives, even if they weren't honorable, as long as they weren't part of that delay and involved in that delay.
I mean, I hate to think that the federal government would take such an advantage of that type of thing. We would hope that they would always follow the law, but yes,
fallout. Probably wouldn't be breaking the law.
The fallout could, that's correct. The fallout could be correct. However, there was no evidence that they did need to do additional investigation or whatever, and I believe it was in Green that this court cited the Woolfolk case, and they talked about the danger of sort of a strict liability. And how the federal government, you have to have evidence of what the federal government did or did not intend. And certainly there would be cases, depending on the facts, where you may be able to cobble together a legitimate collusion or ruse case, but I don't think that this is the one. I think that if you look at the facts in this case, they're far removed from the situation where there's collusion.
Well, Ms. Keller had said some phrase such as he would never have an admission, perhaps, of this. But it seems to me the evidence that you and Judge Benavides just discussed, there is some of that in this case, which is the prosecutor, state prosecutor, saying he was not prepared to go forward with prosecuting this fellow. That's at least circumstantial evidence of this assistance being provided as the primary motive. It does have to be the motive of the U.S. government as well, but it seems to me that's part of the evidence, that is a circumstance that perhaps could be inferred. Isn't that in this case? I mean, isn't there at least something on which you say it didn't have to? That's a different issue. Isn't there some evidence on which Judge Rainey could have found collusion?
I don't believe so under this court's test. This court's test under, in several opinions, is it has to be the primary or exclusive reason to subvert the Speedy Trial Act.
Well,
and there's none of that.
As mentioned,
here.
You're not going to have an admission of that. So what we are looking at are circumstances. Could not, and Judge Rainey Zaney have found, and we affirmed, that there was such collusion based on this same evidence?
No. He was arrested on a legitimate state charge. He was indicted on that charge. And why the state government did or did not keep him, we've all read the hearing evidence, but what we have is Agent Taylor unequivocally testified that he was not actively involved in that state court proceeding. While they exchanged some information occasionally, the cooperation between law enforcement, as Judge Benavides pointed out, is common. But the collusion, if the cases across the country are very clear that it's a very, very high burden, and it needs to be, because it could bring criminal prosecutions and investigation to their knees. Because even as the Supreme Court has pointed out, that this cooperation among law enforcement is sort of a bedrock of protecting society. And of course, defendants' rights have to be protected as well. There's no question about that. But based on the facts here, no, Your Honor, I disagree, with all due respect. And unless
here, where you have the legitimacy of the indictments and charges, it kind of all the more, I guess, insulates or makes the point that you have. I mean, if you've got some feigned or some faked up charges, plus some of what's here, you would agree you'd get a little bit closer, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, but I don't think the charges are trumped up here because...
No. I'm not saying they are. I'm saying in a case where you have a bona fide state charge, you've got a bona fide indictment. I mean, there actually are charges pending. Plus, the kind of testimony you get here, I mean, your argument is that it's even tougher to get over the mere ruse because of the bona fide charges, as opposed to a situation where there are no real charges floating out there, there's no indictment, there's nothing has happened, it's just kind of stringing this time, then if you add some of this testimony, I think you would agree you get closer to what is a high hurdle, but the absence of real charges there seems to me to...
Right, but what we have is the evidence that... let's say is attractive for one making the collusion argument is all coming out of the state's mouth, for lack of a better word. But we have to look at what the federal government is doing here, because they're the ones to have an agreement, obviously, to have collusion. There has to be two parties, a meeting of the minds or whatever. And while this court and other appellate courts are very can provide a lot of legal principles and have done so and apparently largely share one another's views on this, it's always going to be a factually intensive inquiry. It has to be, because you're looking at whether or not these parties got together and colluded to subvert the Speedy Trial Act. In other words, that the government, that was their primary or exclusive intention, and that's always going to be a factual inquiry. It has to be. And then, of course, when you look at the standard of review here, there has to be clear error, which, of course, is a fairly high burden for the defendant, not only in the district court, but then on appeals as well. So unless this court has any questions, the government asks that the court affirm.
We have your argument. Thank you. Ms. Keller.
This court gave us a good roadmap to follow in the La Peña-Juarez case, where the court looked at INS investigation collaborating and INS agents collaborating with a criminal prosecution for illegal reentry. In that case, this court said specifically there was an explanation given by the INS agents as to why it took 5 months for them to release the defendant. and that was there was a backlog of cases. Here, the only explanation, the only words we've heard from the state prosecutor for why this guy sat in jail for 5 months, all we've heard is he was never intending to prosecute him in the first place. He was never intending to take it to trial in the first place. So we have a clear distinction.
He never said that, that he never intended to
trial. He said he was not ready to go forward with his case.
Right.
So 5 months.
Are you ready for trial? No.
5 months
to prepare.
Does that
mean I don't want to try the case or ever?
I don't know. I don't know forever, but 5 months, I'm not ready to go to trial for a hindering prosecution case.
Counsel, when you defend people and you have these docket calls and they say, are you ready for trial? And you say, no, Your Honor, does that mean you're not going to defend the person?
Well, what also we have going on, though, Your Honor, is as soon as the judge said, I'm not going to continue the case, you need to get them moving, he gets on the phone with the AUSA.
I think you make a good case for why the judge could have ruled the other way. I still really haven't heard why he had to rule your way or why it's plainly erroneous for him to make the factual finding that he made.
Your Honor, and there's nothing I can say about the standard of review. It is more of a burden, I think, than a standard of review can be. And when you look at the cases that have found there to be a mere ruse, the district court found those initially, found it to be a mere ruse, and then it was affirmed by the appellate court. So this would be one of the first cases that took place in, but I think the facts are here, I think the law is here, and I think this is a good case where we've got someone who is not going to get out on a technicality for this court to provide some real guidance to law enforcement officials below of what is enough and what's too much, what is cooperation plus that goes over the line of the Speedy Trial Act. Unless this court has any other questions.
Thank you. Ms. Keller, I noticed that you're court appointed, and we wish to thank you for your zealous advocacy. You wrote a good brief and you made a good presentation on behalf of your client. Thank you.